A Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping on our helmets, metaphorically speaking, and tackling a book that's way more about metaphysics than mechanics. Robert M. Persig's huge, profound work, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, often called ZAMM.
Yeah, it's kind of the ultimate philosophy book in disguise, isn't it? It looks like a travel story, a road trip. But really, it's this deep search for meaning, especially in our modern tech-heavy world. Persig felt modern life had this fundamental crisis.
A split, yeah. He saw this destructive divide between two ways of thinking.
Exactly.
On one side, you've got the rational, analytical, you know, the technical mindset, he calls that the classical. And on the other, there's the intuitive, the emotional, the appreciative side, there's the romantic. It's like the engineer versus the artist almost.
Right. And Persig's whole point is that this split causes alienation, you know, feeling disconnected from your work, maybe from technology, even from life itself. This book is his attempt to bridge that gap.
And how does he do it?
He argues the key is understanding and embracing this concept he calls quality. That's the unifying force he thinks can make life meaningful again, even in a technological age.
Okay, so before we get into quality, let's talk about the man himself. Robert Persig lived 1928 to 2017. And his background seems, well, perfectly suited to tackling this kind of split.
Absolutely. He had feet in both camps, you could say. Super analytical. He studied biochemistry, got into rhetoric too, so he knew science and how to build an argument. Rigorous thinker.
But not just Western thought, right?
No, that's the key. He also spent time in India studying Eastern philosophy at Banaras Hindu University. So he was already wrestling with integrating science and spirituality, you know, way before he wrote the book.
But what really gives him that unique perspective, that authority almost,
mm-hmm.
is his personal story. It wasn't just an intellectual exercise for him. This quest, it broke him.
It really did. He was this brilliant professor the book calls this past self, Phaedrus. And his intense, obsessive hunt to define quality led to a severe mental breakdown. Electroshock therapy, the whole thing.
Wow. So he literally tried to think himself into, or maybe out of existence.
Kind of, yeah. He pushed the rational mind to its absolute limit, and it fractured. The original personality, Phaedrus, was essentially destroyed or suppressed by the therapy. So the Persig writing the book isn't just drawing on academic knowledge.
He's drawing on lived experience.
Exactly. Lived experience of obsession, breakdown, and a really, really hard path back towards healing and integration. The narrator of the book is, in a way, trying to understand this ghost of his former self.
Okay, so that context is crucial. Let's dive into the book itself then. It's not just a philosophical lecture, is it? The structure is pretty clever.
Oh, yeah, it's brilliant. It's not just one journey. It's like three happening at once.
Yeah, right. So first, there's the literal road trip, a 17-day motorcycle ride, Minnesota to California. He's got his young son, Chris, with him and some friends. That's the frame.
Then, layered onto that is the intellectual journey. Persig calls these sections chautauquas. They're like these philosophical talks he's having with the reader delivered while writing. That's where he digs deep into the nature of quality.
And the third journey, which you mentioned, is maybe the most powerful.
That's the psychological one. The narrator is slowly, carefully kind of circling back to confront Phaedrus, his intense, rigid former self. He's trying to figure out who that person was and how to integrate him without being destroyed again.
So what's the big idea holding all this together? You mentioned quality.
Right. The core premise is that Persig's trying to solve one of the oldest problems in philosophy, the relationship between mind and matter, you know, subject and object. How do we relate to the world out there?
And his answer is quality.
Yes. He argues quality isn't just your personal opinion, like, I like this. And it's not just an objective property of a thing, like, this weighs 10 pounds. He says quality is more fundamental. It's the event of experience itself, the reality from which both subjects, us, and objects, the world, emerge. It comes first.
Okay, that's a big concept. How does he make that concrete in the story?
He uses the motorcycle maintenance theme perfectly. His friends, John and Sylvia, they ride this expensive BMW. They love the feeling of riding, the romantic side.
The aesthetics.
Exactly. But the minute something goes wrong mechanically, they're lost. Helpless. The machine is just a mysterious black box to them. They enjoy the surface, the romantic experience.
Where's the narrator?
He's the classical guy with his older Norton motorcycle. He's analytical, meticulous. He understands the function, the structure, how all the parts work together. He maintains it.
So one is classical, one is romantic.
Right. But the book isn't saying one is better. The whole point of the journey, Persig argues, is that to live a quality life, you need both. You need to approach everything, work, relationships, technology, with caring. You need to unify the analytical and the intuitive.
Okay, so the book starts, the trip begins, and right away, Persig uses motorcycle maintenance to show this split in action.
Yep. You see him carefully working on his bike, diagnosing problems, very methodical. And then you see the Sutherlands, John and Sylvia, who just admire their bike aesthetically but panic if it makes a weird noise. They depend on mechanics.
But it's not just about the technical skill, is it? There's something more.
Definitely. The maintenance is just the entry point. Persig quickly introduces this idea that doing good work isn't just about knowing how, the classical part. It also requires the right mental state. He calls it peace of mind.
So that's the Zen part. Not actual Zen Buddhism necessarily, but.
Right. It's about the approach. It's about mindfulness, focus, being present with the task. Whether you're tightening a bolt, debugging code, or even, washing dishes, approaching it with care.
And that focus, that kind of quiet mind, seems to lead him back to his past self, to Phaedrus.
Exactly. That's where the Chautauquas really dig in. He recounts Phaedrus's academic quest. It all started with what seems like a simple question: what is quality?
Simple question, but it sounds like it had a shattering answer for him.
It did. Phaedrus's radical insight, the one that maybe pushed him over the edge, was that quality isn't just subjective opinion or objective analysis. It's a real event you perceive directly.
Like you just know when something has quality. A well-written sentence, a perfectly tuned engine.
Exactly. You recognize it instantly. But the moment you try to pin it down with definitions, with analysis, it vanishes. Phaedrus believed quality is what makes definition possible in the first place, but it can't be defined itself.
Wait a second. If it's undefinable, how does Persig then build a whole metaphysics of quality? Isn't he falling into the same trap that broke Phaedrus, trying to rationalize the irrational?
Ah, that's the knife edge he's walking. It's a huge tension in the book. Persig, the narrator, seems to say we can't define it analytically, but we can recognize it and act in ways that create or align with it. And this leads to something really practical.
Okay, practical's good.
The idea of gumption traps. Gumption is basically your enthusiasm, your energy, your psychic fuel for tackling a job.
And the traps are what drain that fuel.
Precisely. They're the little or big psychological and practical roadblocks that kill your motivation. We've all been there.
Like what? Give me an example.
Oh, like intermittent failure, that thing that's broken but mysteriously fixes itself the moment you take it to the expert. Infuriating. That drains gumption.
Or putting something back together the wrong way because you rushed.
Yeah, out of sequence reassembly, or just getting stuck because your ego won't let you admit you're wrong, or you're too impatient to just observe calmly. These traps are where the classical and romantic split causes real problems in everyday life.
So the solution isn't just more technical knowledge.
No, the solution is usually mindfulness, patience, stepping back, observing the facts calmly. That's the Zen practice in action. It applies to fixing your bike, writing an email, dealing with a difficult colleague, anything.
Okay, so moving from the practical traps back to the big philosophy, Phaedrus didn't stop there. He went historical, right?
Yeah.
Developed this whole metaphysics of quality.
He did. This is where it gets really ambitious. He posits quality not just as, important, but as the fundamental reality of the universe, more basic than subjects or objects.
Wow, and he connects this to history.
Yeah, he traces that feeling of modern alienation, that split we talked about, all the way back to the ancient Greeks. He puts a lot of the blame on Plato and Aristotle.
Really? How so?
He argues they're the ones who really institutionalized the split between subject and object. They elevated abstract, rational thought and sort of demoted direct experience and value quality, or erete, as the earlier Greeks called it. They separated knowing about things from caring about them.
So they taught us to analyze the world without necessarily feeling connected to it or responsible for its quality.
That's Persig's argument. And he thinks that philosophical move 2,500 years ago set us on this path towards a fragmented world where we understand technology but feel alienated by it.
And pursuing this idea so intensely, so relentlessly, that's what led to Phaedrus's breakdown.
It seems so. The intellectual isolation, the sheer intensity of trying to overturn Western thought, it cost him dearly. Which brings us really to the climax of the book, the final part of the journey.
The physical trip is ending, but there's another climax happening.
Yeah, the real climax is internal, emotional. The narrator's son, Chris, who's been struggling throughout the trip, has a serious emotional breakdown near the end.
And that forces the narrator to confront something.
It forces him to see that his purely rational, detached approach isn't enough. He's been so focused on the philosophical quest, on keeping Phaedrus buried, that he's failed his son emotionally. He's been a cold shell.
So it's not just about integrating the intellectual side of Phaedrus.
No, it's about integration, full stop. The narrator realizes he has to accept Phaedrus, the passionate, perhaps dangerous part of himself, but temper it with compassion, with love, with connection. True quality, he realizes, requires emotional wholeness, not just intellectual brilliance.
So the journey ends not just in California, but with a kind of psychological healing.
That's the hope. It suggests the highest quality involves bringing together both sides of ourselves, the classical and the romantic, the head and the heart.
Okay, pulling back from the narrative then, what are the big themes we should take away? The first seems obvious, the unity of understanding.
Absolutely. That split between classical, rational, and romantic intuitive. Persig says it's artificial. Underneath, there's just quality. It's the common ground.
Which is a challenge, right? It means we can't just be either analytical or intuitive. We need both for a full life.
You got it. Your ability to analyze structure and your ability to feel value, they're two sides of the same coin. Theme two would be the primacy of quality.
The idea that quality isn't just subjective taste. It's real. Fundamental.
Yeah, it's almost objective in a sense. It's something we discover in our interaction with the world, not something we just invent or project onto it. That gives meaning a real anchor.
And the third theme, maybe the most practical one, the importance of care.
Mm-hmm. That attitude of caring, of paying attention, of striving for excellence in whatever you do, that's the key. It transforms even mundane tasks.
So managing your inbox, teaching a class, fixing a leaky faucet, approaching it with mindful attention can make it meaningful. Combat that feeling of just going through the motions.
That's exactly his point. It fights alienation.
One thing about the book is how quotable it is. Persig manages to distill these massive ideas into lines that really stick with you.
Oh, definitely. They just nail the whole philosophy sometimes. Like, quote one, the real cycle you're working on is a machine called yourself.
Right. Fixing the bike or the code or whatever external thing it's always.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, about working on your own patience, your own focus, your own limitations, inner work through outer work.
Perfect. And quote, two is great for anyone hitting a wall. Stuckness shouldn't be avoided. It's the psychic predecessor of all real understanding.
I like that. Feeling stuck isn't failure. It's actually a necessary stage before a breakthrough. It means your old way of thinking isn't working and you're about to level up, you know.
Exactly. Frustration is the signal.
Yeah.
And then there's the quote that really bridges that text spirituality gap. The Buddha, the Godhead, resides quite as comfortably in the circuits of a digital computer as he does at the top of a mountain or in the petals of a flower.
Wow. So meeting spirituality, quality.
Mm.
It's not out there separate from technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the technology, too, if you approach it with the right kind of care and appreciation for its, like, inner elegance.
Precisely. It heals that split completely.
So how do we apply this stuff? What are the real-life applications?
Okay, application one. Use the gumption trap idea. Next time you're frustrated, stuck on a project, a repair, anything, don't just rage, quus. Try to diagnose the psychic block.
Like, is it my ego getting in the way? Am I anxious about failing? Am I just bored?
Right. Identify the trap. Then the solution is usually a calm, methodical, mindful approach. Step back, observe, break it down. That's the practical zen.
Okay. Application two. Transform your work into craftsmanship. Whatever your job is, focus on the quality of execution, not just hitting the deadline.
Yeah. Write cleaner code, design a more elegant process, craft a clearer email. Aim for that feeling of rightness, of elegant solutions. It turns work from a chore into, well, a path for growth.
Makes sense. And application three, maybe about technology itself.
Yeah, build a healthier relationship with tech. Don't just be a passive consumer clicking buttons. Engage classically sometimes. Pick one piece of tech, use your phone, your car, your coffee maker, whatever, and actually learn a bit about how it works.
Demystify it a little.
Exactly. It gives you a sense of understanding, maybe even control, in a world that can feel overwhelmingly complex and, well, alienating.
So wrapping up, the big takeaway for me is that meaning isn't found by escaping our modern technological lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's about bringing this quality-focused attention, this deep care to whatever we're already doing. The antidote to alienation isn't escape, it's attention.
Well said. And for me, the paradigm shift is how Persig weaves together Eastern and Western thought. Logic and spirituality, analysis and intuition, he shows they aren't opposed. They meet in quality. We don't have to choose.
which leaves us with a final thought for you, our listeners. If living a life of quality means integrating technical skill with emotional care, where in your own life, at work, at home, in your relationships is the most urgent maintenance needed right now. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.